For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe if you haven't already, as you should also make a one-time or monthly pledge to support our work if you haven't already. And I'll say Strave, which I haven't already and maybe just didn't manage, but it's to everyone in Bulgaria who've made that country number 36 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. And then Dovrzdanya to Canada's electric car market, because our government may be fanatically determined to make us all drive cars we don't want and can't charge, but a revealing new report from Statistics Canada, thanks to Blacklock's reporter, says that cutting subsidies caused EV sales here to slump drastically. In fact, quote, new zero-emission vehicle registrations experienced their first year-over-year decline since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, end quote. Also, the story reveals that it wasn't Canadians in general who were buying even heavily subsidized electric cars. It was a particular subset of Quebecers, urban, prosperous, left-wing, and, one dares surmise, government workers. So, will the state back off on forcing us all to buy things we wouldn't choose and couldn't use if we did? Heck no. There's a plan. Unfortunately, it's to send words to do the work of deeds, as if we could all ride talking points to work, shop, and play. Confronted with this no longer slow-motion car policy crash, our hapless new environment minister, Julie Debroussin, babbled at Parliament, quote, we do have in place the regulations that set consistently increasing targets for electric vehicle sales going to 100%. There are also flexibilities built within the regulation that if we wanted to have a larger conversation about, we could speak about. The regulation remains in place, but we are certainly looking at monitoring, end quote. So, she wrapped up her word salad with looking at, having previously said if we wanted to have a conversation while refusing to have one with a Conservative MP who asked over and over again whether the 100% target was mandatory or optional, which is not a hugely complicated question. And there's more where that vapor came from, including from the Federal Parliamentary Secretary for the Environment, whatever that is, who said, quote, the vehicle availability standard does not ban vehicles from using gasoline. It phases in targets for the availability of zero-emission vehicles, end quote. So, it doesn't ban vehicles from using gasoline. It just bans you from buying them. Let them drive rhetoric. To make things not better, Climate Home News is trying to sell us sustainable aviation fuel, right out of the frying pan into the fantasy, because airlines have turned to used cooking oil, UCO, which is supposedly sustainable and comes from ethical sources with supply chains deep into back-alley greasy spoon kitchens in Southeast Asia, so it's got to be legit, right? To their credit, CHN tries to pry into the vexed question, quote, is SAF as green as its backers claim, end quote. Because more and more such people, as the synthetic rubber hits the lack of road, are realizing that any huckster or crank can call a thing green, and you do have to look behind the curtain. Unfortunately, even this newfound skepticism misses the combustible point, which is that to get a tube of metal weighing between 50 and 500 tons to hurtle through the sky at hundreds of kilometers per hour, 5 miles up in the air, full of people in their apparently brick-laden carry-on luggage, you need serious energy. And to get it from cooking oil, new or used, you have to, oh dear, burn it, turning carbohydrates into, water and CO2. Whereupon one group of cranks will holler that the water is secretly chemical manipulation of the weather, or our minds, and another that CO2 is carbon pollution. Whereas we holler, what the dickens does it matter whether it first cooked a French fry? Now, in the midst of all this panic, Weather Fox asks, quote, what would happen if climate anxiety became widespread, end quote? It'd be just like today. Next question, please. And the next question is, where aren't the beaches of yesteryear? Because the New York Times warns, hat tip to Matthew Willicky, that, quote, at the most likely rate of rise, some experts say most of the beaches on the east coast of the United States would be gone in 25 years, end quote. Alas, that warning was issued 30 years ago, in 1995, so they should be long gone, but obviously aren't. The Times also warned, quote, they are already disappearing at an average of 2 to 3 feet a year, end quote. Wrong again. And another thing, an alert viewer-reader reminds us that in the dark days when the Conservatives ruled Canada and ate the climate, Dark Lord Stephen Harper, gave $200 million to green projects in BC, including the Hydrogen Highway. Oh, they have one of those? Well, no. Back in 2007, the idea was for 7 fueling stations, gleaming buses, and self-praise. Now 5 stations mostly gather dust, nobody can find the buses, and the project closed in 2011. Still, hydrogen has a bright future, and always will. Then, from the Unless It's Not file, the once venerable British Times bellows, quote, cities and towns across the UK face a future of scorching summer days and temperatures exceeding 45 Celsius thanks to climate change, according to the Met Office, end quote. It hardly seems helpful to respond that warming isn't thanks to climate change, it is climate change, when this scenario is irresistible clickbait, but also intolerably absurd. As is the journalistic practice of going mental over a study and not linking to it. At 2 times? Though funnily enough, while we were looking for it online, we did find an item in Weather about how Britain has never again had a May heat wave like the one in 1944? Climate ate my D-Day, what? And another thing, as it is at the end, so it was at ye beginning. At least according to CNN, which says, quote, scientists look back in time to find the first signs of human-caused global warming. It's far earlier than previously thought, end quote. So much for settled science, you may sneer, though we beat you to it. But computer simulations supposedly, quote, found a clear signal of human-caused climate change was likely discernible with high confidence as early as 1885, end quote, before the dreaded internal combustion engine cars. So, not actual data from 1885. No, nor actual logic from 2025. Because if the tiny amounts of CO2 that humans were adding 140 years ago could really make a measurable difference, then clearly the climate sensitivity to CO2, aka ECS, is so high that the planet should by now be a kiln. And so naturally the researchers issued a clarion call for more research money. Detected that early, didn't you? And speaking of the past, it seems so recent that the world was young and alive with promise, and we attended COP29 to provide sardonic updates on the breathtaking lack of progress. But actually, it was way back in November of 2024, so of course we're now more than halfway to the next one, and you can't have a conference of this sort without pre-conferences to achieve nothing and pave the way for further lack of accomplishment at the main event. Thus it is that Climate Home News sends an email about the preliminary meeting headed, quote, slow start to Bonn climate talks, end quote. And that teases to a story headed, UN climate chief laments lack of urgency and whining, quote, anyone would think there's no climate emergency, end quote. And they'd be right. Can we go home now? No. Instead, delegates appear to have died and gone to hell, where, instead of crude old-fashioned fire and brimstone, there's an eternity of meetings that can't start on time or agree on an agenda, but can fix the weather and save the third world, provided they just keep happening. Meanwhile, old Carbon River, that old Carbon River, it must do something and it must be bad. It must be bad, and of course, it's all our fault. Thus, quote, rivers around the world are leaking ancient carbon back into the atmosphere, end quote, and, quote, the finding has taken scientists by surprise and suggests human activities are damaging the natural landscape far more than first thought, end quote. Or not, because as Charles Rotter writes on What's Up With That, it instead deals a body blow to an idea that he too had long accepted, quote, the long-standing assumption that carbon isotope ratios, 13C and 14C, provide unambiguous proof that the rise in atmospheric CO2 is almost entirely anthropogenic, end quote. See, what's happening here is that this old-time CO2 has the same carbon isotope signature as the stuff from fossil fuels we burn, but it's natural. And here's the kicker. Rotter admits he was wrong and apologizes for believing and repeating something that was mistaken. Can you imagine what would happen if that habit leaked out into the world of climate science orthodoxy? But no, this finding is a sockdologer, all right. All those charts of the carbon cycle, agreeing that doom looms while often disagreeing about the numbers, are completely wrong. Yet that old climate alarmist industry just keeps rolling. It just keeps rolling along. And by the way, our spell checker didn't recognize sockdologer either, but we don't care. It's a great old word that leaked out of our pedantry. In the newsletter, we also note that in a talk in Oslo, and then a blog post, Roger Pilkey Jr. asks, what did we expect would happen with the politicization of science in the United States? And it's an excellent question, because the answer seems to be that the scientific community didn't think it through before getting into a hole where they're now digging hard, wondering why they can't get out. They denounced much of the public as vulgar, smelly, planet-torching morons, and can't understand why the targets of this invective now seem so ungrateful. In the newsletter, we then continue our Look It Up series with an item on Tornado Alley, an ominous name for a region of the United States that technically includes Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, but in reality seems to include pretty much the whole area east of the Rockies other than New England. And as you can see in this map of annual tornadoes per state from the U.S. Storm Prediction Center, Texas gets 118 twisters a year, followed by Kansas with 82 and Oklahoma with 71. But you'll still be in for lots of tornadoes each year, even in places as far away as Florida, Alabama, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. And if you're wondering whether this year's tornado activity is higher or lower than average, rather than just being blown away by the hype, you can follow the link in the newsletter and our blog and look it up. Now here's another sockdolager. It's extremely cold in Antarctica. Yeah, penguins, you may say. And of course, we weren't rushing to purchase seaside villas at McMurdo Station. But, again with thanks to No Trick Zone, we've learned of a recent study showing that July and August 2023 set all-time cold weather records in the South Polar climate region that alarmists say is warming so fast that the ice is about to melt and drown us all. Now, in case you're not a penguin, August turns out to be an important month for flights into Antarctica, because even though it is extremely cold near the middle of the Southern Hemisphere winter, the weather tends to be calmer than in the spring there, so that's when supplies are flown into researchers. Just kidding, penguins are flightless. As are airplanes, below minus 50 Celsius, as gasoline begins to turn to gel and hydraulics no longer work. So, this very cool stretch in 2023 is probably just weather, not evidence of global cooling. But, as you know, give us unexpectedly mild weather in Antarctica, and the legacy media would shriek doom and gloom about Antarctic ice. Which, come to think of it, they did anyway, even as not just salt water, but gasoline froze. Finally, from the CO2science.org archive, Eichhornia crassipes marx solms, also known as Pontederia crassipes, or common water hyacinth, few I can say that one, is an aquatic plant that was native to South America and yet somehow made its way around the world, including to Ontario, where it's considered invasive. But whether it's a pretty local or a brassy intruder, between 1985 and 2020, 11 studies exposing it to an additional 300 parts per million of CO2 showed an average growth boost of 40.9%. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I don't want my EV freezing.